Well, hey everyone, this is Nate, and today the Vinyl Guide is brought to you in part by the Groove Washer Record Cleaning Kit. The Groove Washer is the best manual record cleaner in the world. I use it every day. It will keep your records clean, free of debris, and that is super duper important if you want your records to sound their very best. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store or go to groovewasher.com and get 10% off any purchase with discount code VINYLGUIDE10 at checkout. That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10. And with that, let's start today's episode of The Vinyl Guide.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
All right, that's me. Hey, everyone, it's Nate. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening to The Vinyl Guide. Much appreciated. Happy March. That sounds very weird now. We're already in March of this year. This year is absolutely flying by. I mean, dang, we are 1/6 of the way through 2020 already. I have no idea where the time goes. However, over the course of just these last few weeks, I have added some really cool records to the collection. I don't know if you've been watching the Vinyl Guide social media, but up on Instagram, I've been posting some new vinyl acquisitions. I just got some beautiful Melvins records recently from Amphetamine Reptile, the Tom Hazelmeyer hand silkscreen covers with splatter pressings. I just got a batch of those. I love Melvins, and they always make some really cool records, like 100 units of these special pressings. So those are up on our Instagram. And I also got some nice pressings from Riding Easy Records. I love the label Riding Easy Records. Just about everything they put out, I'm totally into. And I bought a whole batch of records from them and did a video unboxing of that on YouTube. So you can go up there and check out what's been going on there. And I've also uploaded some videos from our show sponsor, AudiophileUSA.com. Now, I ordered some records from them and they arrived extremely well packed. And these records are now being enjoyed thoroughly. So head over to our YouTube page and see for yourself. And I got to admit, I am going to AudiophileUSA.com very frequently now. They refresh their stock all the time. I'm on their mailing list, so they're able to let me know when new stock comes in. So look, if you're in a remote part of the world, AudiophileUSA.com will ship to you. And they sell only excellent and near mint vinyl records. Many still sealed original pressings. So there it is, AudiophileUSA.com. I didn't mean for this to become a commercial, but damn it, it just happened that way. Now this week on the show, I am absolutely proud to share that we are featuring an interview with record collector, friend of our show, Jen DiEugenio, who I've been absolutely dying to have on the show for many years now. And look, it's a bit unfair to simply say that Jen is a record collector when she's so much more. Look, along with her expected vinyl fanaticism, which many of you may know from her social media accounts, Jen is the chief of sales with Furnace Record Manufacturing, whom we all know and love, as well as being the founder of WomenInVinyl.com, a music industry consortium whose mission is to empower women working in the vinyl record industry to create, preserve, and improve the art of music on vinyl. And now that we are on the eve of International Women's Day, which is March 8th for most countries around the world, I think it's quite fitting that we hear from Jen and the good work that she's doing. She's one of those next-level record collectors. In that, I mean, there are the standard record collectors who collect vinyl and enjoy it for themselves, which in itself is absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Then there's that next level collector like Jen, who collects these records and then does research, finds facts and information on the vinyl pressings, and then shares them freely into the world so that all record collectors can benefit. Now, Jen does this regularly and shares her information generously, especially in the area of her favorite band, Black Sabbath, and especially for her favorite album, Master of Reality. She is constantly picking up new pressings and variations of Master of Reality. She's investigating them, learning about them, and then resharing those facts on her Instagram handle, at Mistress of Reality. Now, if you want to know more about Jen, check out her Instagrams, at Mistress of Reality, Jenerator with three N's and an underscore, or womeninvinyl.com. And to Jen, for all your work in the field of music on vinyl, we all thank you for the work that you're doing. Now, if you enjoyed today's episode and our conversation about vinyl manufacturing, there are several other episodes of The Vinyl Guide you'll probably want to hear, including episode 159 of The Vinyl Guide, featuring a conversation about HD vinyl. What is HD vinyl? Today, Jen and I talk a little bit about it, but if you want to hear more about this innovative technology and possibly the future of vinyl manufacturing, check out episode 159 of The Vinyl Guide on HD vinyl. Also, episode 144 of The Vinyl Guide features a conversation with Eric Astor, CEO of Furnace Record Manufacturing. Now, Eric is one of the top influencers in the vinyl record manufacturing industry, and we talked to him on episode 144 all about the journey and the future of vinyl records. Episode 98 of The Vinyl Guide features a conversation with Dr. Jennifer Otter Bickerdike and why vinyl matters. Episode 86 of The Vinyl Guide features an interview with none other than Bernie Grundman, legendary record mastering engineer, all about the art of mastering for vinyl. Episode 42 with Cameron Henry, Record Mastering 101. And of course, for you Black Sabbath fans, episode 83 with Jim Big Bear Simpson. He's Black Sabbath's first manager, talks about those early days. That's episode 83 of The Vinyl Guide. And episode 62 features an interview with Vinnie Appice, drummer of Black Sabbath, Dio, and more. All those episodes, plus heaps more, are available wherever you get your podcasts, on Spotify, on Apple iTunes, or simply go to thevinylguide.com. And with that, let's get into The Vinyl Guide interview with Jen DiEugenio, record collector and vinyl industry evangelist. This week on The Vinyl Guide, we are welcoming Jen DiEugenio, who is a record collector and vinyl advocate with the Women in Vinyl website, whose mission is to empower women working in the music industry to create, preserve, and improve the art of music on vinyl. Hi, Jen. Thank you so much for coming on the show this week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Now, look, you're internet famous for a few things here. We mentioned the Women in Vinyl movement, and at the same time, you've got an insatiable appetite for Black Sabbath records, especially Master of Reality pressings, and I believe you run the marketing media in front of shop for a Furnace record pressing. Is that correct?
Yep, I'm a sales and marketing manager at Furnace, yeah.
Excellent. Now, look, I want to cover all of these, but first, let's talk about what lit the fire to lead you down the path of collecting records.
Well, I started collecting records when I was in high school. I used to go to this place called Dragon Song, and those from the Northern Virginia area would probably remember it as this dilapidated old rundown house with a wall of moldy oldies. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy in there, and he would pretty much just hang out and burn incense all day. And so we would go, you know, trying to get
those
away
are the
from
best record shops. They
exactly.
The records still smell like incense years later.
Totally. Yeah. And he so we would just go after school sometimes and hang out. It was kind of one of those cool spots to go to. And so, yeah, I mean, I bought a couple Led Zeppelin records, and from there, I was sort of sold. You know, my parents had a few records in the house, and I always thought it was cool that it was one of those things that when they moved from coast to coast that they brought their records, and there weren't a ton, but it was something that, you know, obviously stuck with me in that way. And, you know, after sort of finding or getting bit, I guess, by the vinyl bug, I just never really look back.
What sort of memories do you have of records in your family? You mentioned your parents had some records. Did they play them a lot? Did they enjoy them?
They didn't play them a lot. It was just something that was sort of there. My mom had this really cool antique piece that was, you know, a record player, and it wasn't functioning for a long period of time. And it was one of those things that, since it sort of went out of fashion, it wasn't something that was really, you know, needed to get fixed. And even now she's sort of like, someday, if you want this, fix it up. So maybe eventually. But yeah, I mean, my family was they were a musical, I would say, more than anything else. My mom had played clarinet. My dad always appreciated, you know, jazz, and being an Italian American, you know, Tony Bennett, Frank Sinatra, all of that. So I grew up with a lot of different kinds of music, and I remember that more than anything. And when I was young, I grew up in California before we moved to Virginia. And so there were so many festivals where we would go out to the jazz festival and things like that. And so those kind of memories sort of stick with me as far as just music in general.
Do you still have the early records that you bought? Once they join your collection, do they ever leave?
The early Led Zeppelin ones, I still have those. Some of the other stuff has kind of come and gone depending on taste and that sort of thing. So yeah, I try to keep my collection to things that I actually listen to, although it's still kind of getting out of control.
It's in a constant state of getting out of control. No, look, I know the feeling. So can you describe your record collection? I know you've got a huge Black Sabbath section, which we'll definitely get into, but what is in the collection that you have at home?
Oh, wow. Well, Ray and I merged our collections. And so when we started dating and moved in together, you know, his musical taste and my musical taste are really all over the place. There's obviously a lot of crossover, but my personal music collection is mostly kind of like what people would consider stoner rock or kind of hard rock, space rock. I mean, I love bands like Kazusui or, you know, Sleep, that sort of thing, really. Heavy instrumental, that kind of thing is really where my taste lies. And then obviously, yeah, anything inspired by Black Sabbath, which there's a lot of, thankfully. Right now,
there seems to be a lot more in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And which makes people like you and I, you know, very poor.
Right.
So, and was that a big conversation when you started dating Ray? Was it, you know, there's the toothbrush at someone else's house, and then you graduate toward, let's intermingle our record collection?
Yeah, it was more like, what do we do with duplicates? Do we want to actually get rid of them? So we did. There's a few artists that we still have doubles of, just because, you know, maybe we both had a great copy or something, like Ohm, for example. And I think there's like the one of the Hum records, you know, we both had one. It was a cool variant. We kept them both. So, yes.
And now, how do you go about choosing which variant to get? Because a lot of the music you just described, there's, you know, sometimes they're pressed with a dozen different variants or more. How do you choose which is the right one for the collection?
Well, I'm a designer at heart. So for me, if it's not going to be black vinyl, then I would go with the variant that matches the cover art best. For me, that sort of completes the whole package. Even in my day-to-day at Furnace, if someone were to ask me what color should I go with and they wanted something other than black, I would consult the design.
Okay, so if they have blue elements or a particular shade in their artwork, you would say, well, that's probably a direction you want to go then.
I just complete that whole nice package.
Now, you and I corresponded before you worked at Furnace. And I recall you getting the job, and it was very, very exciting, and then relocating up north. Before then, did you have a career in vinyl?
No. Yeah, we've been friends for a long time, huh? Yeah. So, I worked, as a designer when I graduated college. My design hand is really, for children. So I designed newborn infant toddler clothes for Oshkosh and Target. And then I got sort of burnt out because the new mom typically wants the same kind of design. So I literally couldn't draw another bunny. And then I, transitioned into career advising. And so I did that for, the School of Design at the art college that I went to. And then really, like, the whole time my passion was for vinyl, so I was trying to make moves sort of in that direction. And we moved to Tennessee because Ray actually was working at URP, or United Record Pressing, but there just wasn't really a good opportunity there. And so when Furnace was hiring, my mom actually was like, come home, Furnace is hiring. And we applied and got a job.
Far out. That is a fantastic thing. Both you and Ray said, hey, we're a pair. You take one, you take us both.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we didn't say that, but we got lucky.
That's great. So at Furnace, you run the marketing. I think you do the social media for them as well. What is a typical day for you at Furnace?
Oh, wow. Well, so, I mean, really, it's working with clients to bands, labels, to create their project. So for me, it's really a great opportunity to take all the different skills and careers and everything I've had and sort of merge them into one, along with something that I'm really passionate about. So if we might have a band or a label that comes and says, okay, we have this project coming out and we need 1,000 pieces and this is what the jacket's going to be like and we need to do these kind of variants for it and this is our release date. And then I sort of help them put all the puzzle pieces together. So quoting out the project, kind of discussing some of those options for them as far as packaging, and then making sure that it's timed right to get out the door for when they need it.
You're in quite an interesting position to know what's coming and perhaps even get tempted to overload yourself with records of working at Furnace. I mean, how do you balance it? I mean, it would seem like it's a bit like a pothead who works in a cannabis dispensary shop, I'd imagine, you know? I mean, how do you keep yourself from getting everything?
Well, you know, a lot of it is, honestly, I wish I had time to listen to it all. You know, it's still a job, even though it's a great one. So I wish that every single record that came through I could put on and know it as well as I know the things in my own collection. So for me, it's sort of just, you know, I always research, I always look up who I'm working with and what their project is. And if it seems like something that's sort of in the vein of something I'd be interested in, then I check them out a little bit further. Ray has ears in the back too, being QC. So sometimes he'll be like, oh, did you hear this? Or, you know, and also I don't own all of the accounts either. So we could be doing something for a major label that, you know, I'm not even working on that I find out about later. So it's just a lot.
I don't know if you feel this way. I certainly do. Like I've got a lot of records. I've been blessed to be able to have a decent sized collection, a significant collection. I would say a large collection in most people's eyes, but I don't have the time to listen to them all. Like I would imagine the number of records I have, I could probably listen to them a couple of times each between now and the end of my life. And that's probably about all the time I'll have. Do you feel a bit of a guilt just having a lot of these pressings, a large record collection?
I guess if you put it that way.
Granted, you're a lot younger than me. So you have a much further time away from when you finally die. Me, I'm looking at maybe a couple of strong decades.
You know, I do try to, actually, I'm in the process right now, to be honest, of going through and sort of making sure that what I have is quality and not just quantity. So, you know, there are some things that I'm like, do I still listen to this? Do I need it? Most of the things are still, yes, I need it and I want to hold on to it or, you know, whatever. But occasionally there are some things that I can sort of get back out into the world, especially if I am trying to buy some crazy variant or, you know, of Master of Reality or something. I look at things a little bit differently in that case.
Okay. So give me an example of something that's kind of going on the, I don't need it pile.
Well, so I had a record that when Ray and I first met, he was like, oh, do you have this At the Gates record? And I was like, no, I didn't have it. But because we were just starting to date, I bought it. I've never listened to it since. And so I was like, that doesn't need to stay here. The relationship worked out. I don't need to hold on to this record.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, so there's a Baroness Blue record and this, you know, is going to an Instagram friend whenever he's ready to buy it. So it's not really going out into the general public, but I had a couple variants of it and I really only need the one. I was collecting all of the bone colored version of it. And, I bought, it's like a cool blue and orange crush variant. You know, I thought I needed it because it was cool. And in the end, I don't really. So that's something too that I'm clearing out.
Do you have a budget that you work on every month or every week? Like how many records you can get or how much you could spend on your hobby?
No, I should. I definitely should, but I do not. I'm either waiting for things, or there's certain things that I want, or, you know, in some cases, I try to have a little bit of a cushion for some of the Master of Reality stuff, because that, you know, as you know from helping, in some cases, kind of pop up out of nowhere, and I want to be able to jump on them.
Okay, so you have a slush fund. You have a Master of Reality emergency fund.
Yeah, pretty much.
I try to have a budget, and I try to stick to it, and I really try. But all of a sudden, then I'll get an email from, like, Riding Easy Records. Oh, guess what they're releasing? Oh, shit, I got to jump on that. And so... Yeah, that my budget frequently gets revisited. So let's talk about Black Sabbath, because you have quite a significant part of your collection is focused around Black Sabbath. When did your love of metal and Black Sabbath begin?
Mostly in high school. That's when I sort of started to, actually a little bit before then, I just met a group of people, and it was sort of... It was the right music. It was kind of the thing that I'd been looking for. And I mean, really, like, Led Zeppelin and was sort of my introduction, and rock music in general has always sort of been my preference. And I think, like, getting into sort of what you, I guess, would consider heavy metal, you know, as far as Tool and Manson and some of that stuff, was really kind of my direction that I went from there for quite a while, and is still very... those are still important artists to me. But Black Sabbath is always just sort of there. It was always one that was my favorite. I mean, you know, with the 50th anniversary of the first record, I truly meant what I had said in my post, that, like, there's never been a time that anything Black Sabbath has come on that I changed it, or that I was like, I don't feel like listening to this. And I think that for as long as I've liked them, that really says something about them as musicians in a band.
Yeah. And when you say Black Sabbath, I mean, obviously there's several different forms. There's the Ozzy years, there's the Dio years, there's the Tony Iommi-led years. All of it is appetizing to you?
Oh, you're going to get me in trouble.
That's okay.
I am an Ozzy-era Sabbather. And, you know, I'm actually, it's funny, I'm going to be talking about some Dio records here this week. I like Dio. I like Dio as Dio. I feel like, to me, the true kind of collaborative effort of Black Sabbath was Ozzy era. I think that that's when sort of each member contributed in their own sort of way. But, you know, Iommi, I feel like, was always sort of leading the band, with, you know, Geezer contributing mainly to lyrics. But the main showman was Iommi, and Ozzy, you know, was the voice. And so I think when you take one of those parts away, it's just not the same to me. It doesn't mean that it's not good. I mean, I still like Dio Sabbath, and I, it's fine. It's just not what I consider to be the Black Sabbath that I know.
And by the way, let me step in front of you and get myself into even bigger trouble. I agree with what you said, but I also think that even some of this Ozzy stuff is a little bit difficult for me to listen to. I mean, the real cocaine years of Technical Ecstasy and Never Say Die. Oh, the only reason they're part of my collection is just because I'm a completist. I don't go to those at all. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I really love Born Again. Mm-hmm. That was the first Black Sabbath that was released, I think, in my lifetime, where I was able to actually go and buy it with my own money. I got Paranoid from friends or brothers, but I bought Born Again, and I kind of forced myself to like it early on, just because I spent all my money on it. But I still do enjoy it to this day. So yeah, Black Sabbath, the catalog's a mixed bag. So don't feel ashamed if you like some better than others.
Yeah.
So it's pretty clear what your favorite Sabbath album is. You have a collection that is focused on a lot of variants of Master of Reality. How many variants do you have today?
I believe, not counting the reel-to-reel tapes or 8-tracks, we are at, I have about 37 copies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are definitely still a few that I'm trying to get. So it kind of depends on where I want to stop at this point, because the goal is to then eventually maybe move into another one, you know, and I haven't decided if that's self-titled or paranoid yet, but.
Oh, okay. So this is just the first step.
This is the first step because it's sort of what ignited the curiosity. And so, yeah, this is the favorite and this is the first step, but I feel that there's definitely more to come from here.
Okay. So you've got, you know, roughly 37, well, with the real to real, we'll call it 40 or so variants of Master of Reality. You have pressings from around the world. Which are some of the hardest to find?
Well, there's a Mexican gatefold with like a leather, kind of leatherette texture to it. It's part of this Rock Power series. That's probably the most expensive one that I've bought. And that one's pretty hard to find, I think, because of cost. The Holy Grail one was the one from Taiwan that I mentioned. And that, I mean, it's just so different from all of the others that I really didn't think I'd ever find it. And there's another Taiwanese bootleg as well that has the band on the cover, and that one's pretty cool also. It's like they took a piece of the poster and made that a cover.
Yeah, because I know in Taiwan, a lot of the bootlegs, you could find the records, but having the covers along with them is really difficult just because of the humidity, and a lot of times the covers were discarded before the records. So to be able to find a package like that, where do you find that? Do you buy it from someone in Taiwan? Is there a different collector in a different part of the world that had it? How did you get it?
So that one, and actually the Mexican one too, I was really lucky. Another sort of social media friend of mine was selling some of his collection, and he had a couple of them and was more than generous to offer them up to me before anybody else. So I got really lucky in that way. I have tons of different things that ping me about Master of Reality vinyl for sale. So I'm constantly on the hunt.
And is there any Master of Reality pressing that you're really trying to add to the collection right now?
I mean, I think that the next sort of real dream one would be like if I could find one with an Obi that survived. You know, there's knockoffs all the time. I find people will like make their own Obi and be like, it's original, but they aren't. That I think is pretty amazing to find.
So looking for a Japanese 71 pressing with the Obi.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's probably out there for over $1,000.
Wow.
So, yeah. Okay.
So they get up as high as $1,000, some of these pressings.
But yeah, sometimes. And, you know, that's why I don't typically share too much how much I spend on them, because I feel like so many people just immediately get a Black Sabbath record and they're like, $50. And that's not necessarily the case. You still need to look at quality and all of that. But I definitely have spent a lot of money on these.
Are there other Master of Reality collectors such as yourself? Do you know them and communicate with them?
Well, the one guy that sold me a couple copies wasn't, but he was thinning out his collection. And there's a couple other people just in general that collect Black Sabbath vinyl that I found on Instagram. But yeah, there are others as crazy as me out there.
Some crazier. What's the best pressing you've heard of Master of Reality so far?
Well, let's see. So I think I'm partial to the Vertigo, UK Vertigo, just because I feel like that's the way it was intended. But I think actually you and I have maybe talked back and forth before about the Warner Brothers white label promo and how nice that one sounds. And then I would say the Japanese Vertigo. And that one truly, it sounds nice and clean. And in doing research for some of how these things got made, we found out that that was because they were still able to use virgin vinyl during a time when the US and the UK couldn't do an embargo. And so I think that, you know, in comparing that time frame, that could be a part of why that one sounds so clean.
Some of those Japanese pressings are so beautiful. I've actually gotten rid of a lot of my original Chess pressings to get Japanese pressings of it, because the materials they used are so much better sounding, so much less crackle and everything.
Yeah,
I could totally see that. So in terms of Master of Reality, you're getting close to 40 copies here. At what point do you think you're going to decide to step a little sideways and start collecting the next album?
Well, I think I'm getting close, because, you know, I wanted to get all of the first pressings, and then I want to get some of the pressings that have interesting sort of changes to them in some way, whether it's an odd label or something like that. because that's kind of some of the stuff that I'm researching. But maybe once I have those, then I'll kind of start moving into the others. I mean, I still already, if I see something, I'll buy it. So, I mean, I saw a couple unofficial copies of Volume 4, and I picked those up because why not? I'll get there eventually. So,
so even unofficial copies are fine for you. I always found unofficial copies, like that list could be endless, and I have no idea of the quality. I tend to try to get the ones that are at least somewhat sanctioned, somewhat official, but you're okay with just, you just want to know the history of the record, even if it isn't connected to the band directly.
For Black Sabbath, yes. For other pressings, I should say, especially, you know, coming from where I'm coming from, buy official copies.
Oh.
So, but yeah, I mean, you know, for Black Sabbath though, I think there is such a history behind them, you know, so the fact that these unofficial copies for the Taiwan releases were made for soldiers in the war, there's a reason behind it. And so it wasn't just to rip off music like it can be in some cases now. So, you know, I think that is a really interesting story and one that warrants sort of being told and owned. So,
Are there other albums beyond, well, really other bands and albums that you collect multiple variants of?
I have a couple or, you know, a few of other variants of other bands, but for the most part, it's really just Black Sabbath. And I only really buy another variant if it's really cool. There was the new Sleep record that came out and it had a really interesting tour variant. So I got that one. But there's nobody else that I have, you know, 6-7 plus copies of.
You post these online quite a bit. And I believe one of your Instagrams is it Mistress of Reality?
Yeah, I started that one for the cataloging, yeah.
Okay. And have you been able to get the attention of anyone in the Black Sabbath camp? You ever get a like from someone?
No. I mean, Blasco's awesome, and he's a great supporter from, you know, Zach Sabbath. And, you know, he obviously tours with Ozzy, so he's great. But not the actual, like, the guys in the original band, but maybe someday.
I got a like from Pink Floyd one time, the official Pink Floyd thing. And I know it's just some guy in an office, but I was like, ooh, I swoon.
You know, so I love Smashing Pumpkins. And I randomly posted a story that I was listening to one of their records at work. And they reposted it. And I had a little fangirl moment over that.
Have you ever been able to meet anyone from Sabbath? Or do you have any autograph pressings?
I have an autographed Technical Ecstasy with Bill Ward, and then I have a self-titled signed by Ozzy. I haven't been able to meet them. I was hoping to get to do at least the sound check package for his tour, but it just got canceled, so sadly.
And is there any mystery around Black Sabbath records or Master of Reality in particular that you'd like to solve? What is a question that you have that's just enduring, you haven't been able to find an answer for yet?
Well, for me, I think, you know, so getting into the Dead Wax etching a lot has been interesting to kind of see how metal was moved around and who was using what from whom because of Polydor and all of these kind of weird label intermixings. But I think the artwork, again, kind of that's, you know, my background. I wish I could talk to someone who knew how all of these changes got made and why. You know, I found in some cases it was due to, you know, cost. But I get that from like a gatefold to a single jacket or like the box cover to a standard cover. But the colors are just, it's so interesting. And I wonder why. Is it a country preference or what? Yeah.
And we didn't even talk yet about the poster that was in Master of Reality. Do you know the history of the poster and maybe how many copies were made of that?
I don't know how many copies are made. I haven't been able to find anything that's definitive. And certain releases say that they did come with one and others say that they should have, but then it's just a lot of contradicting information. So I haven't been able to sort of uncover that yet.
And I believe that the hardest poster to find is the UK. Correct me if I'm wrong here. The US Master of Reality first press, a lot of them came with a 4-panel poster. And in the UK, it's the same image, but it's 6 panels. So it folds out twice. Is that
right? Correct? There are different sizes. Yeah.
Okay. And the UK one is exceedingly hard to find. Have you been able to add one of those to your collection?
I do. I have a UK first press with the poster. Okay. So that's like, yeah.
That's your retirement package right there. Cool. Now, Jet, is there anything else about Master of Reality that is good to share that I'm not asking?
I don't think so. I mean, honestly, my biggest thing is that I'm not in this alone. Like, I really, if people know stuff about it, like, I really would encourage them to, you know, reach out and tell me about it. You know, I really do want to catalog this as, you know, as a fan and for other fans that may be interested in both, you know, their love for the band and for the vinyl. So it's not just me over here, you know, showing off my collection. I really do want to kind of get to the bottom of it. And so if anybody has feedback or knows something about it, you know, comment, email me. Would love to know.
That's fantastic. Because when I'm at a record fair and I find a Master of Reality that looks a little bit strange, I always wonder, like, okay, I'm going to send this to Jen just because I know she's interested in this, but I don't know if it's if me times 50 people a day doing this becomes overwhelming.
No.
Okay.
I love it.
All right. And again, any particular Master of Reality pressings, any parts of the world that are gaps in your Master of Reality collection?
Not that aren't like readily available. You know, I still need to get an Italian one. A lot of them though are just different versions of the Vertigo release. So as far as like the real Holy Grail ones, I'm lucky to say that those kind of really hard to find ones, I think, are good. So,
well, we'll keep searching and I'm sure we'll keep sending you pictures of things and you'll, oh, I already have it. I already have it.
I always appreciate you doing that.
No worries. So let's talk about Women in Vinyl. What's the best way to describe the Women in Vinyl website that you developed?
Well, sort of like the mission, you know, to empower women working in the industry. My focus is really on the vinyl industry specifically. I feel like there's already a lot of really good collector blogs and musician-focused women blogs. So my focus is for those of us working to like create the physical product in some way, or in some way carrying vinyl forward. So maybe a record store owner, things along those lines. I think it's just not as heavily a women's industry. And so I think that that's something that kind of those stories need to be told.
There seems to be a very low percentage of women in vinyl. And even on this podcast, I went through and I counted. We've got 200 plus episodes now, and I believe you are the 7th female that we've had on the show. And that's through no targeting or anything in my regard. It's just there seems to be just very few women in the vinyl record industry. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a lack of knowing about it, knowing how to get into it, knowing what sort of available opportunities there are. I know for me, that was one of the biggest things. And I think for a lot of the women that I talked to, a lot of them didn't start out with the intent to do this. They started out somewhere else or sort of stumbled on an opportunity. And I think that's really interesting. And so my goal is to sort of, work to make it a more known career path for people that are really passionate about music and vinyl. So yeah, I mean, I think part of it is education. You know, I think we need to, you know, to kind of piggyback on the whole STEM, the STEM education. That's something that I think we could kind of start earlier, kind of explain some of those opportunities, because, you know, there's a lot of women that don't think about becoming a mastering engineer. I mean, I have loved music my whole life and I never thought how I could be involved in it. And I've collected vinyl for so many years and I've never knew how I could, you know, do something with that either. So, Yeah, I think, you know, just being more inclusive and kind of getting the word out to people younger that these opportunities are available.
Hmm. Is there a gate or a hurdle or something you see that would discourage young women from considering a career in vinyl?
You know, I think that things are starting to get better, but I think the perception has been that it's sort of a boys club in a way. You know, a lot of times you go into record stores and the guy behind the counter is a man. And, you know, I've gone into record stores where I was treated differently than Ray when we were asking about something. You know, there was a record shop that we went into and there was a Vertigo slip mat behind the counter. And I asked him how much the Vertigo slip mat was. And he was like, wow, I'm surprised you knew what that was. And I was just sort of like, I don't think I'm being any sort of way about that. But it was sort of a strange way to approach it. And then he ended up being like, you can have it. It's free because you knew what it was. So I was like, maybe he would have said that to someone else. But I don't feel like the way that it came across was that way. And, you know, so there's just certain things that I've experienced and I know other women have said that they've experienced. And I think that that can kind of put people off. And then not really having people that they know of that they can look up to. And I think that's hopefully what Women in Vinyl can kind of spearhead is, here's all of these awesome women doing this thing. And if I can make it a nonprofit that would help these girls kind of get scholarships and find their way into the industry, then they have all of these role models to sort of look up to.
That's fantastic. With all the interviews and discussions you've had with the Women in Vinyl and posted on the website, is there a common thread? I mean, other than the love of music and records, is there a common thread that seems to be a repeated story in those?
You know, I think for the most part, the repetition is just that there was a love for vinyl, there was a need for something, and so they decided to do it. And I think the other sort of thing that is the common thread was sort of that not everybody, you know, again, started out with the intent to do this. It was, they sort of found their way here. I mean, there are a couple people that I've interviewed that said, you know, there was a job opening, and I applied because it was a change of pace, and it ended up being at a record pressing plant, and now this is an amazing thing that I do.
And not just with Women in Vinyl, but in your, you know, vinyl manufacturing experience, are there many people who work in vinyl pressing plants that don't have a passion for the music? It's just a job making, you know, something like if they were stamping out car fenders. Is there much of that in the vinyl industry?
There is, yeah. I mean, thankfully at Furnace, we're passionate about records and music, and so it's a really great environment there for that. But yeah, I mean, there's people that, you know, it's like work programs and things like that in some cases, because it is manufacturing. And so not everybody is necessarily passionate about it.
Is there anything that we as the, you know, as the listeners can do to help inspire the next generation of vinyl manufacturing?
I think it's just being an open community. And I think that that is what I sort of love and why I have sort of used Instagram as my platform, is really because it is very inclusive and conversational and people are passionate about it. And I think if someone wanted to get into this industry and they were sort of part of that community, it is a place where they should, for the most part, feel comfortable. So yeah, I think just having those conversations and really truly just being like wanting to learn. And I think that that's the biggest thing, not just like telling everybody everything you know, but just learning too and having those discussions. And that's the best way I think we can continue to create that really strong vinyl community.
Do you know if pressing plants, and obviously you'd know with Furnace and maybe URP, do they have internships or do they have abilities for kids, young women, young boys to be able to go through and see the machines working and to perhaps be inspired to make that a career choice?
At Furnace, we've had a couple interns. So we do have internships here and there. And I'm sure other pressing plants do too. And I think I'm pretty sure that a lot of the mastering engineers have said that they are doing that type of thing as well. And there's some really good organizations too. You know, for women in particular, but like Women's Audio Mission and Sound Girls, that also kind of open up opportunities for those types of things.
What do you think of the future of the vinyl industry? Like, if you were to fast forward 5 or 10 years, you've got a very unique perch to be able to see manufacturing and collectability. What do you think will change over the next 5 to 10 years for vinyl collectors?
I think the technology will have some sort of an impact on how we manufacture, which will then likely have an impact on vinyl itself, you know, with being more eco-conscious, or like the HD vinyl stuff that's, you know, come around. And now with the tragic Apollo fire and sort of, you know, what will that mean for things? So I think that there's a lot with that, but I don't see it going anywhere. I think that, you know, having become a world where we're so connected to devices and technology, I think that the way that we listen to our music in that tactile form has sort of become more appealing again, because it's the one kind of way. I mean, sure, we all still stream for the most part, but it allows us to kind of step back and have that moment, that tactile thing, that experience. And so I don't feel like that is going anywhere.
You brought up the Apollo fire. What is the general feeling in the vinyl manufacturing industry about the results of this and the future?
You know, I think it's still very uncertain. You know, thankfully at my job, we use MDC lacquers, but I think, you know, the fact that they were the main U.S. supplier is going to cause a lot of people to sort of figure out what they're going to do. And so I guess that's where maybe some of that technology will have to come into play. The DMM machines, I mean, that's an alternate way for things to be cut right to metal, but like there's none in the U.S. because the Scientologists own them all.
Really? So, why did the Scientologists own them all?
They ended up at some point buying them up to cut all of their teachings to vinyl. And so they have all the DMM machines in the U.S. And so there's only a few more in the world and they're all in Europe.
Oh my God, that means Tom Cruise and John Travolta now control the music.
Another thing, like, you may notice in some of your collection too, is like that DMM has such a like sharp, like bright sound. So,
well, yeah,
it's ideal.
DMM's never been a favorable option. The first thing I thought of was HD vinyl. I thought, all right, well, Gunther and team, they just stumbled upon what may be a stroke of luck in accelerating their technology.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that someone comes up with something. I mean, it's needed for sure.
So if something doesn't come up, let's say HD vinyl doesn't take traction in time and, you know, the Scientologists don't get on board, do we just see the lacquers just skyrocketing in value and vinyl, you know, getting more expensive?
I think a lot of people will go overseas for the DMM stuff. And I think potentially MDC, who the Japanese lacquers, they'll hopefully be able to do more. Right now they only allot a certain amount to the U.S. So hopefully they'll be able to kind of increase that. And I think someone else will step in at some point.
Okay. This is an opportunity for someone, but we're just not sure how it'll play out. Eric's pretty smart. I think he may be part of that solution too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Well, Jen, thank you so much for coming on the show, and I really, really do appreciate it. I know we've been communicating for many years now. Quite some time ago, we had a blind record package sending. I think I sent you 5 records, and you sent me 5 records, and that was really fun. Again, I think the work that you're doing, especially with Women in Vinyl, is very inspiring, and I certainly hope that if there's anything that me or the audience can do in that regard, certainly let us know, and this platform is always available for you to be able to do that and express that. And really, I know you're going to cringe at this word, but your authoritative knowledge on Master of Reality is very, very refreshing. I think each of us has a record that we love to deep dive into and know every little bit about and collect these different variants. For you, it's Master of Reality. For me, it's Led Zeppelin II and a couple of others. listeners and everyone out there is in that same boat, perhaps to varying degrees, but the work you're doing and also sharing that information out there and making it available is really admirable. So thank you for that. And for the work that you do at Furnace and keeping those records pressed, again, we all owe you a great debt of gratitude. In the future, I think the music community is going to erect a statue of you somewhere. because of all the things that you're doing for the vinyl community. I know, I'm just kidding, but we should, if we had our shit together, we really should, because you are contributing on so many fronts. So I do want to recognize that in you. What are the Instagram handles that people can follow you on?
So Women in Vinyl is one of them. And then the Sabbath variants are Mistress of Reality. And then my personal account is Generator. And so it has several N's, but.
I know I lost count. It looks like four or five, but yeah. my eyes are old. I know it's just Generator. Yeah. And there's also womeninvinyl.com, I believe, that has your interviews up there with all sorts of women in the vinyl manufacturing and music industry.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Jen. Much appreciated. Alrighty, there we go. Jen DiEugenio, ladies and gentlemen. Jen, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your stories and for being such an inspiration. I want to make sure everyone knows about your social media handles over at Instagram, at Generator, that's three N's and an underscore, also at Mistress of Reality, and at Women in Vinyl. And of course, head over to womeninvinyl.com and check out the work that Jen is doing for the vinyl record industry. It is sorely needed and very, very welcome. That's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thanks again for tuning in. Make sure to share these episodes across your social media. Tweet them out. Share them on Instagram, on Facebook. Let's help build the Vinyl Guide community, sharing information, showing some records, bring in your friends, and that is much appreciated. We'll be back with a brand new episode shortly. So until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram at Vinyl Guide. Until next time, keep spinning.